I'm Judd Fieldsend. I was born Hans Heinrich Feiger in Czechoslovakia. My mother was from Czechoslovakia. My father from Dresden in Germany.
A lifetime ago, John Fieldsend lived with his Jewish parents in his father's hometown.
When things got too dangerous in Dresden for us as a Jewish family, we escaped to my mother's parents' home in Czechoslovakia. I remember the German army marching through our village.
His parents decided to send their two sons, aged 7 and 10, on the Kindertransport. Those were trains carrying children, most of them Jewish, to safety in England. Emergency UK legislation granted them entry. Foster families came forward to host them. Volunteers arranged the paperwork.
My father had said, "Sit down, boys, you're going on a long journey. We can't come with you." As the train was leaving, my mother took her wristwatch off and gave it to me through the window of the train and simply said, "This is for you to remember us." So they probably knew more than we did.
After the war, he received a package from the Red Cross with family photos and then a letter.
My mother wrote, "Dear boys, when you receive this letter, the war will be over. We want to say farewell to you, who are our dearest possession in the world. Don't forget us and be good." And a couple of weeks after writing this, they went to the gas chambers, to Auschwitz. What a letter.
It would take 50 years for Fieldsend to find out exactly who had arranged his passage to England. In 1988, a BBC TV show, That's Life, got hold of a scrapbook found in the attic of a retired stockbroker named Nicholas Winton. In it were records of hundreds of children for whom Winton had paid train fares, forged travel documents, and arranged foster families. He never talked about it publicly. A photo of Fieldsend as a boy appeared briefly on TV.
One evening, a friend rang me and said, "John, were you watching That's Life?" I said, "Well, John, you were on it."
Fieldsend phoned the BBC. He was invited to the studio for the next episode. Winton was there, too. What Winton didn't know was that the entire studio audience were people he had saved.
Can I ask, is there anyone in our audience tonight who owes their life to Nicholas Winton? If so, could you stand up, please?
The whole studio audience stands up.
Mr. Winton, would you like to turn round? You'll have the chance to meet these people properly after the programme. In the meantime, Mr. Winton, on behalf of all of them, thank you very much indeed.
It was absolutely amazing. He was such a human, ordinary, quiet man. It was amazing.
50 years after Winton saved him, the two men began a belated friendship over pub lunches and family visits.
He could have been imprisoned. He could have been shot. He had no reason to be involved. He was just a good British stockbroker.
Winton died 1 year ago, aged 106. At memorials for him over the past year, Fieldsend has connected with other survivors, and they've devoted themselves to a new cause, today's child refugees from Syria.
Hello.
Hi, Lauren.
Nice to
meet
you.
I'm Ruth. Hello.
Pleased to meet
you. Eva, come and say hello. In a suburban London row house, Karen Goodman leads me over to a tiny 94-year-old woman wrapped in blankets in the corner.
And this is my mother, Margit Goodman.
When she was 17, Margit Goodman escaped to Britain from her native Prague.
Mum, can you remember the month you arrived?
I remember the date.
The date, go on.
5th of June 1939. When I left, it was still a free country. I soon became occupied by the Germans.
She left her mother and her father behind, and her brother. They were put on trains to a concentration camp, and they were gassed there. So she was here alone, and nobody survived.
Karen Goodman recently briefed members of parliament on how the UK could rescue Syrian refugee children, like the effort that saved her mother.
I wouldn't be here now. Well, they saved our lives, didn't they?
How do you feel about Syrian refugees today?
Nobody's here to welcome them. We came at least to some families.
The idea of taking in foreign refugees is a sensitive topic in the UK these days. Leaders of the Brexit campaign used posters of refugees walking across Europe to urge Britons to vote to leave the European Union, with its free movement of people and quotas for refugees. Earlier this year, Prime Minister David Cameron told a rowdy session of Parliament he doesn't want to grant asylum to any Syrian refugees who've already travelled to Europe on their own.
We shouldn't be encouraging people to make this dangerous journey. I think it's right to stick to the idea we keep investing in the refugee camps and in the neighbouring countries.
But dozens of kinder transport evacuees asked Cameron to change his mind and accept Syrian children already in Europe. They launched a letter-writing campaign, and Cameron has since reversed himself, though he won't say how many children will be accepted.
My survival is entirely due to the extreme generosity of the British government in 1938. And the contrast of the present government is quite pathetic.
Leslie Brent, now age 90, says Cameron has been under pressure from right-wing anti-immigrant groups. Brent recalls the 1930s in his German hometown, where anti-Jewish sentiment got so bad, his parents sent him to an orphanage in Berlin.
The director of the orphanage nominated me to leave on the first kinder transport, which left Berlin on the 1st of December 1938. Only a few weeks after Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass, when Jewish shops and homes and synagogues were ransacked, and my parents had until then really believed that things would change for the better.
His parents and sister were later shot by the Nazis. Brent went on to serve in the British Army in World War II and later became a professor of immunology, contributing to work that won a Nobel Prize in 1960.
I don't know anyone who came over on one of the kinder transports who hasn't more than repaid the generosity of Britain in one way or another. And I have little doubt that these modern refugee children, if they came to this country, would act in the same way. There's absolutely no reason to think that they wouldn't. Everyone thinks of them as a nuisance and a burden. And
Brent says he and so many other survivors are living proof of how mistaken that belief can be. Lauren Freyer, DW, London.